All right, so let's begin at the beginning. You are using a program management approach to teach people the latest in acquisition. Why is program management important to learning acquisition and how acquisition is changing in the federal government?
Well, program management considers the entire life cycle of the development of a system. And so acquisition is a huge part of that. Out in the private sector, project management, acquisition is a very small part because it's easy to purchase things. But with the government, it's huge when it comes to acquisition, and it's a huge part of it. So in our curriculum, one-third of the project management curriculum deals with acquisition.
So acquisition, in other words, really amounts to – each acquisition amounts to a project. Is that getting worse – or I shouldn't say worse, but more intense in this era with so much focus on how the government buys?
Well, it is. In a lot of ways, there's such a diversity to the acquisition. And so while some things are moving towards services, you know, which might not have that same project sense to actually, you know, procuring a system, it's expanding. It's actually getting to be a larger issue.
And Professor Mattern?
Yes. What we're trying to do is to show people how to, as far as some moving forward with programs and projects, is to maybe take larger programs and break them into more manageable segments, so that you can scope them and have something when you're done that you can deliver. And as far as new things go coming up, we're discussing more agile techniques, doing things. And we're also talking about how we fund projects when you go through the PPBE process, which is trying to fund a program. It takes several years to get funding. And there's talk of creating an IT fund, if you will, that will allow programs to come out more directly and be pushed forward more directly.
So tell me more about that agile approach, because we're hearing that word more and more, both as a software development term, but also in process for acquisition. Is that something that's coming into this now?
It's becoming more to the forefront, and it is a very intense type of development technique. It does require the customer or a functional user to be present most of the time during this, and it goes in short sprints, if you will, maybe 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks to a deliverable, and it's very different from the way we've done larger systems. So we're still learning on that.
And the main thing is that you don't know your requirements in advance. The old waterfall method we used to use was doing all the requirements up front for 6 months, a year, to make sure you had them pinned down. And with Agile, you actually develop the requirements while you're building the system. And so that's quite different than the old models.
So that's something that OMB has kind of been pushing with this short development cycles and deliverables every 6 months, part of the whole IT reform plan. So it sounds like you have updated the curriculum so that it matches some of that culture of the way of the 25-point reform plan.
Yeah, we might mention that we were involved with looking at the competencies for IT program and project management for both DOD and for the OPM. We both were involved with work groups to do that, and both of those have since been published. And so we've been lucky to help guide some of this.
So what are the competencies needed nowadays in general that, say, might not have been as important, I don't know, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago?
Wow, that's a great question.
Yeah,
I think a lot of it is being able to think on your feet. When a project is 3 years long, you know, you're working at one segment at a time. But now, you know, with the requirements changing on a daily basis, you know, working to drive for a solution that you can, you know, bring to the people quickly, it takes a lot. Like I say, thinking on the feet is the best way to look at it.
All right. Let me ask you this. How do you – and by the way, we're speaking with Professors Andy Gravitt and Russ Mattern of National Defense University's iCollege on acquisition, education, and trends for government. And of course, there's been a lot of acquisition change in the last couple of years, the last 2-3 years. How do you keep the curriculum up to date so that the people coming in get the information they need to keep up with what's going on, so to speak, out there?
We have we're members of the IT Functional Integrated Product Team for the program management area, and that helps us keep abreast of what's going on that way. We spam ourselves a lot. We try to find all types of sources, and so we have information coming in from all over. But one of the greatest sources we have, since we have mid-level to senior-level students, are the students themselves, because they're running programs and projects. They're in the trenches right now doing it. And we pick up a tremendous amount of information just from them. So we have, if you will, a lot of sensors out there all feeding toward us.
And it seems like IT acquisition is the driver of so much of the change, more so than buying, I don't know, office supplies or leasing facilities. Is that pretty much the case?
A lot that doesn't get done with hardware type of things gets done in software, including weapon systems. And so IT has just grown and grown as far as making things function better and more smoothly.
Because if you look at the dollars, I guess weapon systems, of course, are the biggest thing dollar-wise that the federal government buys. But it carries with it many of the same problems that IT systems have with it. And so it seems like some of the IT system buying changes are moving over to acquisition of weapon systems.
Yeah, and IT is actually catching up. I don't know whether it'll ever overtake weapon systems, but it is definitely gaining in size each year. And the difficulty is with a weapon system, we're pretty good at nailing down the requirements. But with IT, we're really not. And I think you can even see it in our own personal lives when we're sitting around trying to figure out what we're going to buy next. You know, you kind of just go to the store and stare, you know, at our view on the web. And I think a lot of ways in government IT, we have that same, you know, issue. Is what is it that we really need to get our mission accomplished?
One thing's for sure, for as long as there have been computers for people, the one you want is always $2,000, no matter what year you're in. And so now you implied this, and we should say this explicitly, NDU's iCollege is not just for DOD buyers, is it?
No, that's correct. We're a graduate school, and it's across government, and we also have folks from the private sector. They come to the school. So we're about 20% military, 50% DOD, and 30% other, you know, civilian agencies.
And when they come there, is it a daily type of thing, or do people stay over? I know you're down at Fort McNair there.
Right. And we have two major formats. One of them is e-resident, and one of them is distance learning. And so one of them is completely online courses. In the e-resident portion, you actually do 2 weeks online and then 1 week in the classroom.
All right.
So it's a pretty intense week.
About how many people come through there every year?
It's a little over 2,000.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite a number of students.
All right, and we're going to get back to this. We're speaking with Andy Gravett and Russ Mattern. They're professors at National Defense University's College of Acquisition. Good morning. It's 8:19. Welcome back to the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're speaking this morning with two professors from the National Defense University's iCollege of Acquisition as part of our special series, Inside the World's Biggest Buyer. In studio with me this morning are Andy Gravett and Russ Mattern. And gentlemen, I wanted to ask you about the failures of acquisition that we read about that gets the attention of Congress so much. Do we have a skills gap in the federal government with respect to fulfilling the acquisition rules and doing it right, or is something else going on?
And I'm not sure it's a skills gap. I do think in many cases we need to have more experience for our program managers. The more you do it, the better you get at it. We call it accumulating scar tissue, because as you go along and get burned or something doesn't go exactly right, and that's kind of the life of a program or project manager, you learn from that and you do better the next time. And so I think experience has a lot to do with it. I think also resources can be an issue. IT people tend to be very,
optimistic.
Yeah, optimistic, yes. Probably overly optimistic. And they want to please their bosses, et cetera. And so when they make a prediction about how long this will take, how much resources, how many people will it take, sometimes in an effort to try to do the best they possibly can, they can sometimes fall short.
And yet the people coming are not beginners, are they?
No, our students are mid to senior level management, you know, so they have a lot of experience, you know, coming in, and there's still an awful lot to talk about.
And what about resources? Do they have enough people? Do they have enough, I guess, money means people, because this is, there's no way of automating a lot of this acquisition work. So what do they complain about?
Yeah, and I think resources is a big part of it. You know, we don't have enough resources going in. I think that's just an inherent problem with our project management. Another thing that happens, though, is that we're getting so many external requirements pouring in, or things that requirements for things that might not meet our mission. Like, everybody needs an iPad now. And how do you secure, you know, that kind of technology when it comes in. And so those kind of things hit in waves as each new technology comes out. You're expected to implement it, but it may not be mission focused. So how do you, you know, handle that? And how do you make sure it's secure in an environment that, you know, as we hear about all the time, has some very big security issues?
So the issues you deal with then are pretty topical from time to time as things change out there in the ecosystem of the federal government.
Absolutely, they can be. And just changes in requirements and changes in scope can really send a program into a tizzy, if you will, and the program manager has to maybe reprogram and refactor their program so that they can direct it into the new direction that the boss wants and try to come up with a product that is still deliverable. But oftentimes when you do that, it takes more resources to get to that finish line.
Yeah, there's a rule of thumb that if you change 10% of requirements on a project, it'll never be completed.
We've seen that enough times, just like the FAA. I can think of a few IRS, a few agencies over the decades.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the private sector is often looked to as a source of expertise for the federal government. And I think the 25-point IT reform plan and some of the other plans like the digital government plan and so forth are patterned after what is thought to be best practices in the private sector. How much does the private sector inform what happens at National Defense University?
Oh, and that's tremendous. We have a lot of speakers that come out of the private sector. I was actually hired straight out of the private sector. I had 22 years of NASA experience when the iCollege pulled me in. And so, and I've been there, you know, for 4 years teaching. So we have a lot of private sector, you know, information coming into the college.
We've come to the realization that when we're trying to do IT projects, it's a collaboration. The government no longer has all the people they need to do it in-house. And so it's a cooperative effort between government and the contractors. And that's just the way it really is. And by having speakers come in from the private sector and giving their viewpoint on things, it really informs the students and gives them a better view of how the interaction can occur.
Now, we have contractors, and then we also have the rest of the private sector. And can the government learn anything about acquisition from, I'm just making this up, a company like, I don't know, Whirlpool or Ford Motor Company? And how does that work?
Well, it's interesting that you mention that because we do have an advanced management program, which is 14 weeks. But in week 13, we take them out to a major U.S. city to meet people who are actually doing those jobs, CIO jobs, et cetera. And they get to talk about acquisition-type issues. So they're very fortunate. Students are very fortunate to have this type of exposure.
And one of the most important things to hit acquisition recently is the concept of supply chain management, or at least it's new in emphasis for the federal government. So, Professor Gravitt, how is that working its way into the offerings at NDU? Because you're not buying the supply chain, but yet, in a sense, you are.
As a matter of fact, we're building a new course that's going to be starting in October on supply chain risk management for exactly that reason. There is, you know, not only the normal supply chain logistics issues, but now there's also the security risk of having parts from all over the world going into our systems. And so it is a huge factor and will be coming up, you know, coming up a lot in the future.
Now, the DOD has mentioned that a lot, but do you also find that coming into the civilian side, that awareness that, holy cow, this stuff is made of a lot of parts?
Oh yes. If you've seen maybe some of the slide sets have been floating out on the internet, tracing parts originating in different countries and then how many hands they pass through and where the counterfeit part was inserted into the hardware, it's very interesting.